The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Bethlehem Primitive Baptist Church in Ocala, Alabama. To find out more information about Bethlehem Church, visit us online at bethlehempbc.org.
Look in your Bibles, if you would, to Proverbs 16. We come to verse 26 tonight, and I admit that when I began to study this verse, I was puzzled and just curious to know more about what this verse meant. And so I spent a lot of time trying to force myself into this verse and just try to really understand what it's talking about, Proverbs 16:26. And then I turned a few pages over to the book of Ecclesiastes, and there was just like a water faucet turned on of, oh, I get it. This is what it means. And it just started flowing. So once again, the Lord definitely is the interpreter of his own scripture, and scripture interprets scripture. So here is a very unusual and an unusually worded proverb. It says, he that laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him. Very unusual worded proverb. You have a double right there. He that laboreth for himself. You don't see that a whole lot. And so let's get the definitions. First of all, laboreth. Well, let me say this. He that laboreth, where the word he right there is a reference to the living soul. One, it means the living soul. The living soul of a man or a woman that labors, and laboreth means a workman, a sufferer. I thought this was interesting. A wretched one. Toiling. The Hebrew word there is amel. And then the word immediately after is a little bit of a different Hebrew word, amal. Amel and amal. So if you read it in the Hebrew, it's kind of neat. It's nefesh amel amal. That first sentence there. And it means the soul of him that labors for himself. And then it says, for his mouth craveth it of him. When I first began to look at this, I thought, this has to do with the self-satisfaction of a job well done. And I think it does. Whenever you labor and you accomplish a job and you look back out on it from a physical standpoint and you can see what you have done and you've done a good job, then that's confirmation within you. I've done a good job. And I don't mean somebody patting themselves on the back and going around telling everybody, look what I did. But just from a self standpoint, I can think about, I've told you before, growing up on the farm and we'd build a fence or we'd cut a hay field or we'd do this or we'd do that. And you could look back on the day and just breathe a little sigh of relief and just say, that was a good day. You know, we got a lot done today. I've been able to do that in a different way in the practice of law by just working on cases. And I'll tell you, you don't need to practice law unless you are regularly praying for patience. Because things stretch out over a long period of time. You want it to be done quickly, but it just stretches out. And that's the way it is with a lot of things. That's the way it is with a lot of things. But when you're like me and you didn't used to not pray for patience a whole lot, you got to pray for patience. But when I finish a job, I finish some case or I resolve it. There's a great satisfaction there, especially if it worked out in favor of your client or if everybody was happy involved with whatever was going on. The soul of him that labors for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him. In this agrarian society in which this was written at the time, an agriculture-based society, it also has a physical meaning further than just being satisfied with the job well done. They worked and they ate. That's how they ate, was because they worked. And a lot of times they ate what they had worked with. Some of you have grown gardens. And there really is nothing more satisfying than sitting down and eating something that you have grown, isn't it? It's a lot different than just sitting down and eating something that you bought at the store. I encourage you to try it sometime. It's a lot different. And now listen, you can take it to an extreme. I live on a place where sometimes things occasionally will be taken to an extreme. You know, you don't have to have 2,000 ears of corn. Aren't you glad mom's not here tonight? You don't have to have 2,000 ears of corn a year to be satisfied in the craving that you have. You could have 30 ears of corn. You could just plant a small little patch and just eat the little bit of what you've got. You don't have to have 4,000 ears of corn. You don't have to put up 10,000 cans of peas. You see, but there is a satisfaction that comes in benefiting from the fruit of your labor. We're not much of an agricultural society anymore. And some of you men and women work in jobs and you save up some money and you take a trip. We just recently went to Pennsylvania. And obviously had to save up some money to take that trip. And, you know, thinking about that throughout the months ahead before it and setting aside this and I'll hold on to this and I'll hold on to that. And there's a satisfaction in being able to go. Now, when the money runs out, you kind of get desperate. But there is a, if you take a trip, a family vacation or something like that, you have earned the ability to do that by setting something aside, you see? So it has the meaning of not just being satisfied in the job that you did, but actually benefiting from what you have done. And there is always a constant craving going on when it comes to the appetite. You know, you don't sit down on Monday and eat all of your meals for the whole week, do you? That's silly. You can't do that. You've got to eat ongoing. You see, there's always a craving that's going to be coming back. You worked, you labored, you bought some food, you ate it. You got to go to work again. You've got to labor again. You've got to eat it, eat again. See, that's the way God designed us. He that laboreth for himself. And now there is a sense here. You may have a job and work for someone else. And you may say, well, I don't labor for me. I'm laboring for the man or for the boss. But that, yes, you are laboring for someone, but you're also laboring for yourself because you're the one that earns the paycheck and puts the food on the table. So there's all kind of different ways that you could look at this. And Proverbs 14 and 23 says, in all labor there is profit. Just a few couple pages over. And I don't know if you are like me, but when I do finish a job and it's been a good, we've accomplished something good, as I said, there's a great satisfaction in it. The word crave means to press or to urge or to bend. So I mentioned this on Sunday, and I really hadn't looked ahead to see that this was going to coincide with some of what I talked about. But God ordained work before there was even sin in the world. Lamentations 3 and 27 says that it is good that a man bear the yoke in his youth. It is good to learn how to work at an early age. I often speak to and interact with college students and high school students on a regular basis. And we talk about the things that high school students and college students are working on. And they're working on a degree, or they're working on graduating, they're studying biology, they're studying math. Lord help them, they're studying math. And I'll often say, hey, don't forget, there's an end to this. Oh, right, they just can't believe it. Oh, I can't believe there's an end to this. And don't forget, you're going to get paid one day. You don't get paid right now while you're studying and you're trying to get your degree. You're paying somebody to do that often, or your parents are, or a scholarship fund is. But there's coming a day when you'll actually get paid for what you do. There is profit. So you see, maybe you haven't got to that point yet to where you are hired and earning a salary. But there's profit in what you're doing if you're equipping yourself to do that one day. In all labor, there's profit. Children, I know you can't believe it, but there is profit in folding your clothes and putting your socks together and matching them up. I would actually probably, if that was possible, you know it's not possible because of the sock monster, but if it was possible to put all socks together, that I'm OCD and that drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. You know, it drives me so crazy that around my house now I have gotten a separate bag, wash bag, that I put my own socks in. That's just me. I got to match those socks. I can't stand it. I went for 15 years without matching my socks. And, you know, somebody's little tiny, tiny foot size sock will be in my stuff. So I wash my socks by themselves. And did you know, I know it sounds crazy, but even with washing those socks by itself, in a bag by itself with a cinch sack on it, you know, where it can't get out, I've lost a sock or two. There really is a sock monster. But anyway, I'm not up here to do stand-up comedy because I'm not very funny anyway. But the point is, if you're learning to fold your socks and put them together, there's profit. I've told y'all this before, that one of the things that my dad required my brother and I to do is we had to hang up our Sunday clothes. We had to, because mom was going to have to come back and press them. You know, and so, you know, after looking like a crumple monster for a few times going to church, you know, I finally got the message. I look like a complete dolt. You know, everything I got is all crinkled up. So at a very early age, and plus daddy said, if you don't start doing it, I'm going to wear you out. At a very early age, I learned to hang up my suit clothes. It saves so much time down the road. And even to this day, it's a no-brainer for me. I just go in there and Rarely will Sister Tracy ever come in there and see a pair of suit pants on the floor. Maybe I was just too tired that day, but I in my mind I said, I'll get them in the morning and lay them out neat. I never throw mine down and crumple them up. Why? Because I was taught in a very early age to do that. And it stuck with me. Boy, I wish a lot of other things I'd been taught stuck with me. Don't think I'm some golden angel. I'm not. There's a lot of things that didn't stick with me. But you see, there's profit in labor. It doesn't matter if you're learning to hang up your suit clothes or put your socks together or do the laundry or learn how to clean the kitchen or how to, you know, make sure the spoons go in the right drawer or the forks go in the right drawer. There's profit to that. You young brothers and sisters that are learning stuff like that, you're going to have to do it in your house one day or your house is going to be chaos. You're going to be ashamed to ask Brother Tim over when he's old. I sure would like to have Brother Tim over, but golly, these socks are everywhere. And these spoons are not in the right place. And they're all dirty. I don't know how to wash. Well, I do know. My mom and dad told me, but I just don't do it. I'm serious. There are people that are ashamed to have anybody over because their place is such a wreck. See? There's profit in labor. You young guys are learning how to keep a house. Now listen, don't think everybody's got their stuff-a-lanch closet. Everybody's got that. Everybody's got it. Don't you lie and say you don't. You know what a stuff-a-lanch is? It's where you open the closet door and all that stuff is like an avalanche, a stuff-a-lanch. Everybody's got places like that. Just make sure you keep them in there, you know, when everybody comes over. But there's profit in labor. It doesn't matter if you're learning how to do something that tedious and small. It carries over. Now, let's look at Ecclesiastes. I baited you on Ecclesiastes and said the answer and the understanding of this verse is in the book of Ecclesiastes, and it is. It's all through the book of Ecclesiastes. So I'm going to do a little more reading tonight than I normally do and make some comments, but I think it just speaks for itself. In Ecclesiastes 1, and we're talking about, in all labor, he that laboreth for himself, and he craves it. He craveth it of himself. He craves it. In other words, there's a satisfaction in labor. And I want you to see the dissatisfaction that is described here and the different ways. And it all depends on how you're looking at it. Ecclesiastes 1, we've got to read verse 1 to set the tone. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. This is old man Solomon, just a year or two before he dies probably. And he's crying out what a vain life he has had. Watch this now. We're talking about labor. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he hath taken under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Into the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. And you say, well, what's it got to do with labor? All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. All of those things that he described there, the rivers running, the sun rising, those are all things that require labor. They don't just happen. You know, what if the sun just said one day, I'm too tired, I'm just not going to come up? We wouldn't be here by the end of the day. What if the sun just decided one day, I'm just going to float off into the sunset? No pun intended. Well, you know, the sun labors. Why? Because God set it there to labor. Why does the wind blow? Because God created the wind. And all these things, there's labor. Why does the river run? It's because God created waters and he made rivers, you see. And all this, there's labor. And Solomon looks at all this. You and I hopefully would look out there and we would say, oh, look, the sun, it's beautiful. Oh, the sun's going down. Look at the sunset. And we'd say, ah, feel the wind. It's cooling me off. And then we'd look at the river. I was just a few weeks ago, week before last, looking at where the Potomac River and where the Shenandoah River came together. And it was amazing. And I was going, wow, it's amazing. And Solomon is looking at this and going, ah, this is terrible. It's just labor. Everything's just moving. It never stops. Well, how do I get off of this ball? You see? It's driving him crazy. Because everything just keeps moving and it's labor. I got to get up in the morning. I got to brush my teeth. I got to put my clothes on. I've got to go out. It never ends. It's cycling and the generations pass. This is a depressed old man. Let me tell you, don't think for one second that you can't get there either. And it all depends on how you look at the things around you. Let's keep going. Ecclesiastes 2. It's all through the book of Ecclesiastes, verse 9. We got to read a bunch of verses here. Now listen, Solomon is reaching a point where he's describing himself. He says, "So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained in me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my," what? "Labor. And this was my portion of all my labor." It sounds like he's doing pretty good right here. He says, "Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king? Even that which hath been already done." Do you want to know some of the madness and the folly that he was engaged in? He says in verse 3, "I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men." You see, he saw that wine was bad. He saw that addiction was bad. He saw that the strange woman was bad. But he said, "I'm wise enough to handle it, and I've got all of this. What else could there be withheld from me? I'm so wise." And so he did all those things. And now it's turned back on him, which it always will. And he said, "Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly. I should have never done those things. As far as light excelleth darkness." That's pretty far too, by the way. "The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceive also that one event happeneth to them all." Let's keep going. "Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth to me. We're all headed for the grave. This is depressing. And why was I then more wise? What was the point of all that wisdom I had? I'm just going to die one day. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever." I kind of beg to differ, Solomon. We're remembering Solomon right now, are we not? "Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool?" You see, he's just going on and on. He says, "Therefore, I hated life." You know anybody like that? Oh, listen, there are people that hate life. They're miserable because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Well, I hate to tell you, but his son Rehoboam was a fool. Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great..." You see how these just rehearsing over and over the vanity of his life and the vanity of labor. He's saying basically, "I wish I'd never had wisdom, and I wish I'd never even been the king's son. I wish I had never even worked or labored for anything. It would have been better just to be dead." That's terrible, isn't it? Look at Ecclesiastes 3 and 13. "And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It is the gift of God." Now, wait a minute. That's quite different than what we've been reading. Solomon says that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It is the gift of God. That's a little different than the depressed direction he's been going, where he hadn't gotten anything out of his labor. Look at Ecclesiastes 4, verse 7. See, this is all through the book of Ecclesiastes. He says, "Then I returned," and this is Ecclesiastes 4 and 7, "Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it is a sore travail." This is a picture of a man who is totally self-absorbed. And maybe he doesn't have any brothers and sisters. And maybe he doesn't have a mom and dad. Maybe he doesn't have anybody to leave this to. And he doesn't understand even the purpose of labor. See, he said, I don't even know why I'm laboring. See how Solomon's flipping back and forth? All right, look at Ecclesiastes 5:13. Oh, it gets better. Y'all hang in here with me. "There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand." I was thinking about some of the rich folks that die that try to take it with them. You know, that's not new. That's what they did in Egypt. They also did that in China. I was visiting with a dear sister who's a member of the church at Old Carroll up there in Maryland where I was. And she had made a trip over to China. And she'd seen in person those, is it terracotta? Isn't that what we say, terracotta warriors? Okay. It's the terracotta warriors. There's hundreds of terracotta warriors that are buried underground. Some farmer stumbled on them that were buried. And he stumbled up somebody's stone head. And then they begin to dig. And an army of terracotta warriors that a rich king, emperor of China, thousands of years ago, decided that he needed that army because when he died, he knew that he was going to face a battle. And so he made thousands of terracotta warriors that got buried underground eventually. You see, he didn't take it with him when he went. Those terracotta warriors didn't go with him and fight anything for him. You don't take anything with you when you go. See? Solomon says, he's come to that realization. He says, you know, I realize a man comes into the world with nothing. And guess how he leaves? Nothing. He doesn't take anything with him when he goes. You've never seen, You've never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul. Because y'all know I've told you the story. We came pretty close to that one time. But you don't see a hearse carrying a U-Haul out. I read about Frank Sinatra. It said that when he was buried, that they buried him with a bottle of Jack Daniels whiskey because that was his favorite. And I'm telling you, he didn't have a drop. There's other people like Houdini. He was buried with the letters of his mother underneath his head. He loved his mother. But he's dead. He's not taking them with him. See? I mean, it's a nice symbol, maybe. Somebody I was reading about, Humphrey Bogart, he was buried, he was cremated. And in his cremation urn, they put a whistle. Because some movie he was in that said something like, you know, just whistle for me, babe, you know, and I'll come back. It's not going to be a whistle that brings Humphrey back. It's going to be a shout and a voice of the archangel. And no movies are going to come back with him. No car. You see, we've got all these ideas. Now listen, I myself strapped a watch on my granddaddy's wrist when he died. And it's down in the bottom of that casket of just a few miles from here. But not once did I think my granddaddy was going to go, I wonder what time it is. I just did that because I thought it was neat. And I thought it would be neat that would be going off in there. But I know in my heart that it's not going to be a watch that wakes him. It's going to be the trumpet of God, the voice of God, and he'll come forth from that grave. So you don't take it with you when you go. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor. And this also is a sore evil. And I'm going to wind it up here. I encourage you to go and study out this theme of labor throughout the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes. It goes all the way through to the end. But we're going to close with the end of this verse here, the end of this chapter. And this is a sore evil that in all points as he came, so shall he go. He came in with nothing, he left with nothing. What profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? That man's laboring for the wind. What if you showed up for work on a Friday and you completed your week and your employer brought to you a bottle? He said, here's your pay. You'd be like, what? I want a check. I want some money. I want some green. They said, no, I'm paying you. This is the wind. I got wind in here. I caught some wind yesterday. And that's what it says the wicked do. That's what it says this man that understands the perspective. He's laboring for the wind. He's got nothing in his hand. See? That's depressing, isn't it? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Now we're back to understanding what it means when he says he that laboreth for himself, and he craveth it of him. You see, here is a person that's enjoying their life and their labor. Here's somebody that understands, yes, I'm going to die one day. Yes, I'm going to go on and be with the Lord, but I'm going to enjoy what I've got right now. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. And I love this verse, for he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. That means, you ever said this? You ever said, where does the time go? People that say, where does the time go, are not in jail. Because if you're in jail, I know them. And they're just, man, when do I get out of here? People that are being blessed and joyful in their life are not looking at the clock at work and going, when do I get out of here? When do I get out of here? No, they've got some joy in what they do. Because their labor is not in vain. They can enjoy the portion that they've been given and enjoy their family and enjoy what they're blessed to be able to have with what much or little they gain through labor. I remember when I was a child, there was a field right below the old house up there. That field was huge to me. And it was that field, I probably spent half of my childhood in that field. Cutting, raking, fluffing, baling, hay, putting out chicken litter, I mean, you name it. Sometimes just playing and riding four-wheelers through it. And inevitably, the grass would be cut, and it's time to do all the stuff that Dad would do to it. And he knew how to put up good hay. And I was old enough to drive, and Dad would be looking at that field of hay, the golden hay that was dried out there and was beautiful, or the green hay that needed to be dried and fluffed. He would look at that, and you could just see he was just salivating. Man, that's some good-looking hay. I can't wait to get it in the barn. That's awesome. And I'm standing there next to him, and I'm going, I can't believe I've got to ride around this thing at least 150 times because I'm the fluffer. Well, no, I'm the cutter, and I'm the fluffer, and I'm the raker. That was depressing to a 12-year-old. But my dad, his perspective is, this is beautiful. This is going to feed cows. This is going to save us money. You see? And also, sometimes I'd be the cutter, you know, and Daddy'd say, no, this is how you do it. And I'd get so bored out there and hate what I was doing so bad that I'd think, well, okay, well, I'm going to make it a little different. I'm going to cut this corner a little bit further and come back and cut this corner later just to break it up a little bit. It's still the same difference. And actually, I probably took more time doing that. But my dad would look at that and just salivate over, this is beautiful. And I'd be going, oh. See, it's all in the attitude, all in perspective. And you know what now? Now, I'm telling you now, today, this moment, if I could go right now or go back and get on that tractor and fluff or rake or bale or cut, if I could do it right now and put a sermon in my ear, have or just meditate on the Word of God, oh, how I wish I could do that. I remember those days. They were long and hot. And I hated going around that field and around that field and around that field. And the days dragged on. I remember those vexatious days of my life. And then I think about the good days when I was doing something I was really had my heart into and I was really enjoying it. I was really putting my heart to it. I don't even remember those days. That's a fact, isn't it? In all labor, there is profit. The text says, he that laboreth, laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him. I hope we see that it all depends on how we look at it. It all depends on how we look at it.